Can tensions over Ukraine be diffused? The US and Russia hold more talks, but there's no breakthrough. Washington warns of the consequences of an invasion. Moscow seeks assurances on security. Is there a middle ground to be reached? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I am Hashim Ahalbarra. The US and Russia have held what they say are frank talks as they try to resolve their standoff on Ukraine. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov repeated denials a huge Russian force along the border is preparing to invade. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the US and its allies would respond severely if it did. The meetings failed to find agreement other than both sides would continue steps to defuse the crisis. Natasha Butler has this report from Geneva.
At a hotel in Geneva, the US Secretary of State and Russian Foreign Minister arrived for crucial talks aimed at defusing tensions over Ukraine. Antony Blinken and Sergei Lavrov set the tone early. Both said a breakthrough was unlikely.
We don't expect to resolve our differences here today, but I do hope and expect that we can test whether the path diplomacy, the dialogue remains open.
We are not expecting a breakthrough at this meeting either. We are expecting answers to our proposals.
After the meeting, Lavrov said Moscow wanted a written response from the US to its demands, including a guarantee that NATO will not grant membership to Ukraine, something Blinken has repeatedly called a non-starter. But he said the US would respond to Russia if Moscow addressed its concerns and respected Ukrainian sovereignty.
We've been clear. If any Russian military forces move across Ukraine's border, that's a renewed invasion. It will be met with swift, severe, and a united response from the United States and our partners and allies.
U.S. intelligence says Russia has already amassed at least 100,000 troops on its western border and is moving weapons into allied Belarus north of Ukraine. The US and Russian positions are clearly far apart, Blinken and Lavrov making very little real progress. But the two men did agree to continue to pursue diplomacy as a way of de-escalating a crisis which could lead to war. It was on the shores of Lake Geneva that talks between the US and Russia led to the end of the Cold War. Decades on, old rivalries have resurfaced. Both sides accuse each other of aggression and relations have dangerously deteriorated. The outlook for the coming weeks is turbulent. Natasha Butler, Al Jazeera, Geneva.
The build-up of Russian troops on the border has raised fears of conflict for many Ukrainians. And the first shipment of additional US military aid, $200 million worth of equipment, has arrived in the capital, Kyiv. But hundreds of people have rallied in the city calling for de-escalation. For more on this, I'm joined by our guest in Washington, D.C., Kurt Volker, Distinguished Fellow at the Center for European Policy Analysis. He's also former U.S. Representative for Ukraine Negotiations and U.S. Ambassador to NATO. In Kyiv, Peter Zalmayev, Executive Director of Eurasia Democracy Initiative. And in Moscow, we have Vladimir Sotnikov, political commentator and specialist on Russian foreign affairs. Welcome to the program. Kurt, no one was expecting the Blinken-Lavrov meeting to produce a breakthrough. But however, is it likely to diffuse the tension?
No, I don't think so. I think Russia has been very clear all along. It has set out these demands of Ukraine not having its own sovereignty, not being able to choose whether to join NATO or not, NATO being required to pull back military forces from allies in Poland and the Baltic states, demands that Russia knew would be unacceptable, and yet it continues to push those and insist that the U.S. and NATO agree to those. It's not going to happen. So as a result, I think we are just biding time while Russia amasses more military forces in and around Ukraine. I think Russia is really not looking at the diplomacy seriously.
Mm-hmm. Peter, is it the same sentiment among Ukrainians that this is just a matter of time before an invasion by the Russians?
Well, sort of like the proverbial, you know, rifle that's hanging at the beginning of Anton Chekhov's play is set to, like, eventually fire by the end of the play. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, time and a matter of the sort of scale of an attack that will be coming from Putin. That's what most Ukrainians believe. I would say that overall there's less of the scenario that there will be a full kind of a blooded attack and an invasion of Ukraine with a potential siege of the capital city of Kyiv. That's probably unlikely. But there's a whole host of options and scenarios that Vladimir Putin is considering, because I do not believe and I do not buy his concerns that NATO is encircling Russia is genuine. I think what is really genuine is Vladimir Putin's lack of desire to see a prosperous and a democratic Ukraine. So I think anything is possible. Anything is on the table, from a limited attack in the east of Ukraine, a potential land border to the Crimea, and maybe instigating a coup and overthrowing the government in Kyiv.
Vladimir, the Russian foreign minister, has been denying reports about military build-up on the border with Ukraine. However, when you look at the troops being massed there, and when you look at the tactical groups sent to Belarus, this is an indication that the Russians could potentially be planning a two-front attack.
Let me disagree with my esteemed both colleagues from United States and Ukraine, as I suppose. Russia is not going to invade or just to make any incursions to the Ukrainian territory. Actually, what about those negotiations which were held between Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Secretary of State Blinken? That was a right to defuse the situation, but unfortunately, these negotiations didn't give any results. So I think that eventually, this solution to these tensions will be found. And I think that there will be other rounds of consultations and negotiations, at least one, between Russia and the United States concerning the Ukrainian issue. And just regards for maneuvers, Russia has all the right just to maneuver whatever the number of the troops are. Let me point that this is going to be, and this is actually taking place on the Russian territory. But that's not a sign that Russia is going to invade. And let me disagree again with my Ukrainian colleague that Russia is preparing to incur to invade in the east of the Ukraine, or just how to make a coup.
Okay. Kurt, at the center of the negotiations between the talks between the Americans and the Russians, a list of demands presented by the Russians. The key element here, the Russians want a written document from the Americans saying that NATO is going to be committed to not admit Ukraine as a member anytime in the future. Do you see the Americans willing for a compromise when it comes to this particular point?
No, I don't. Ukraine is a sovereign country. It's an independent country. It has a long historical and political and social and cultural identity that make it a state in Europe. It is Ukraine's right to decide whether it chooses to join a security alliance for collective defense or not. And I don't think it is for the United States or anyone else to say that, no, that's never going to happen. NATO is a defensive alliance. It has reduced its military capabilities dramatically over the years since the end of the Cold War. It has never attacked or threatened Russia. Ukraine does not threaten Russia. And so the idea that Russia, which has attacked Ukraine and has attacked other countries in the neighborhood and has taken their territory, can be a threat is real, which is why it's important for a country like Ukraine to seek to join NATO. So no, I don't see that being taken off the table as a possibility. It won't happen soon, but I don't think anyone's going to write off that possibility.
Peter, when you look at the statements made by NATO, European allies over the last few years over the issue of Ukraine, do you feel like you're in a confident position where, if needs be, the Americans along with NATO and Europeans would be there to protect the Ukrainians?
Very good question. Let me just pick up and briefly comment on what Ambassador Volker said and in countering what our Russian panelists said, you know, whether Russia is or is not planning to attack Donbass. Let's be clear that it already has. It has annexed Crimea, contrary to all international agreements, and it instigated a war in the east of Ukraine. It's not a civil war, contrary to what Russia says. Now, regarding your question about NATO, you know, I would not be so hopeful, unfortunately, and I would say that Ukrainians are also not very reassured, especially after what we heard from President Biden when he decided to, insert a dose of bracing honesty about NATO's potential response to a variety of different scenarios, something that is honest, but should have been confined to private conversations among allies, you know, where, with the audience of millions of people listening, and especially one particular important individual, Vladimir Putin. This was not very helpful. And, you know, it does seem that there's no clarity as far as responses to various different scenarios. I have concerns about the response of the German side that has ruled out any sort of military assistance to Ukraine and has also has not been willing to discuss the future of the Nord Stream 2 project, which is a gas pipeline from Russia and is a very, very important component of an economic response should Russia attack Ukraine.
Vladimir, what do you think is Russia's biggest concern? Is it NATO's expansion, or is it just the fear of seeing a neighbor which is more vibrant, setting up a strong democracy that could further spread eastwards?
Thank you for the question. Actually, first of all, I would like just to briefly comment on what my Ukrainian colleague panelist said. I was surprised at saying by him that Russia is made an aggression to Crimea. That is not true, actually, because there was a general vote in Crimea, and the Crimeans actually gave their voice to the reunification with Russia.
Well,
so that was not the kind of aggression.
Just for the record, that's the Russian narrative. Internationally, we're talking about annexation of the Crimea. And also an incursion into eastern territories.
That was not annexation, and that was not an incursions. Because, I will get straight to the point. I would say that Russia is not fearing the Ukraine. That's you remember there was an article by President Vladimir Putin where he sat and wrote that Russia and Ukraine, this is just a common people. That this is there was a Ukrainian Russia actually somewhere back in the past. But regarding your question, I think that the most concern of Russia, this is an enlargement of NATO and putting the NATO missiles, medium-range missiles, on Ukrainian territory. That's why Russia would like to have written guarantees, because the written guarantees, this is a legal document.
Mm-hmm. Peter, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in. It is an ironic situation where Vladimir Putin claims that NATO constitutes an existential threat to Russia, but it's precisely his actions in the last 8 years or even longer that's created this insecurity in the region that has prompted not only Ukrainians to aspire with greater and greater force, greater numbers to become a member of NATO, but the longstanding neutral European powers such as Sweden and Finland are all of a sudden talking about the potential accession to NATO.
Kurt, a second major demand by the Russians is withdrawing NATO troops back to 1997. This is before several countries in Eastern Europe were admitted. Is this something that potentially could be debated between the US and its own allies within the NATO before coming back to the Russians with an answer?
No, that is not something that the United States or NATO would do either. We have to first remember the history that Poland, Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Bulgaria, Romania, they were either occupied by the Soviet Union or had governments imposed on them by the Soviet Union and part of the Warsaw Pact, with the exception of Romania. And they are now free and independent countries. Again, they were historically free and independent. They are again now. And they will refuse to be subjugated to Russia in any way in the future. It's not for Russia to tell them whether and how to defend themselves. And NATO, likewise, will not allow an outside power such as Russia to dictate the way that it goes about its preparations for defense in the case any country, any member of NATO would be attacked. So that is not on the table. One thing our Russian colleague said that I think could be addressed is missiles. He said that this is a concern of Russia, that NATO could possibly put missiles into Ukraine. This is something where we had a previously existing agreement, the INF agreement, and also concerns that the West has about short-range nuclear forces that Russia possesses in its territory, but very close to Western territory. And here, I think there is scope for negotiation and agreement on not deploying those sorts of weapons or on locations of where it is acceptable for those to be deployed mm-hmm. on a reciprocal mutual basis.
Peter, we've seen some equipment delivered to the Ukrainians over the last few months, particularly from Britain, the next generation light weapons, the NLOs, and also the Javelins from the Americans. But apart from that, the Germans, as you said, very reticent about the need to send German-made weapons into Ukraine. Many countries are saying we have to be really cautious when it comes to sending any strong signal towards the Ukrainians that could further upset the Russians. Do you feel like that ultimately you might end up being the ones to pay a price if the giants in the region decide to move forward?
Well, you know, it is. I wish I could tell you with certainty what that would lead to. You know, there are two scenarios. You know, Russia, Putin's propaganda machinery can take the armament, situation to claim that you know there is an encirclement happening, and Ukraine is being used as a puppet, as a sort of a territory from which to strike against Russia, mm-hmm. or as many, including American military analysts and supporters of Ukraine, have claimed, Vladimir Putin understands only force, and the sooner it's demonstrated, the better. Therefore, America has already agreed to supply Ukraine with Stinger missiles, you know, mm-hmm. including by giving the Baltic states the green light to do that. And mind you, it was during the Afghanistan war by the Soviets that the Stinger missiles mm-hmm. allowed the Mujahideen to eventually knock out the Soviet power and force it to withdraw. But once again, I wish I had a clear answer. This is a very complex scenario, and it could go both ways.
Okay, Vladimir, you said that one of Russia's main concerns is using Ukraine and areas in the and eastern countries on the border to launch attacks against Russia. But don't you see the potential for resuming talks on the intermediate range nuclear forces treaty that the US abandoned in 2019 as something that could send reassurances to the Russians?
Yes, correct. I see the potential, actually, resuming the talks on the this treaty. And I think that once the Ukrainian crisis will be diffused to some level, those talks on the resuming the agreement, which was abandoned, you're right, some time ago, they will start to take place. So I think that this is the point where the United States and Russian Federation can make a good agreement. When I'm saying a good agreement, I mean that both sides will prolong this treaty, will sign probably the continuation of this treaty, and then from that point, the diffusion. I'm an optimist. I'm mm-hmm. an optimist, actually.
Okay.
And from that point, the relations between both powers will be getting better.
Kurt, there is this concern about the short-range missiles being deployed in those areas near Russia and used by the Americans and NATO in the near future to destabilize Russia. But don't you see at the same time that Vladimir Putin is trying to bring to the forefront once again the issue of the tactical nuclear weapons that the Americans have deployed in places like Belgium, Italy, Germany and Turkey during the Cold War? And he's using this opportunity to say, you know what, part of the deal would be for the Americans to take them out of those areas.
He is certainly bringing that up, but he's conveniently not bringing up the fact that Russia has vastly more, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more short-range nuclear warheads in that same area of Europe, Russia's western frontiers facing Europe. So this deterrence has been in place for 70 years almost, where the U.S. nuclear guarantee is linked to Europe so that there is equal security for all NATO allies. I think that the U.S. and NATO would be willing to discuss INF and SNF limitations, but on a reciprocal mutual basis. And of course, it would require strict verification. It was Russia that had violated the INF treaty previously. A future agreement would require good verification provisions.
Peter, when the Russians say that the reason why they annexed Crimea and provided support for the secessionists is the need for the Russians to protect the Russian-speaking communities there, do you have any concerns that the Russians, in a way or another, are trying to reshape the whole narrative surrounding the independence of the Ukraine back in the 90s and going back to the notion, you know what, what happened in 1991 was a mistake and therefore we need to rewrite those chapters, which could entail the Ukrainians coming under the fold of the Russians once again?
Well, you know, let's not go too far. I mean, I am a Russian, originally a Russian-speaking Ukrainian from Donetsk. This is where I was born. This is where I grew up. Contrary to Russia's propaganda claims, the Russian language and Russian speakers were never under any physical harm threat, and the Russian language wasn't threatened. This is completely concocted as a rationale for the annexation of Crimea and the subsequent instigation of the war in the Donbass. What we're seeing is happening in Ukraine. What we're seeing, what's happening with Belarus, which has essentially become a protectorate of Russia and has essentially ceased to exist as a de facto independent state. What we're seeing in Kazakhstan, where Russia has invoked its you know, collective security treaty to restore order, it really matches what we heard Vladimir Putin say over the years, that he considers the breakup of the Soviet Union as one of the greatest geopolitical tragedies of the 20th century. He misses the Soviet Union. He misses Russia's ability to project power to what it calls its near abroad. Okay. And obviously, there will be a semblance of that he will try to reunite as under Russia's umbrella.
Vladimir, briefly, if you don't mind, each time there is a crisis, there's all this debate in Russia, exactly reverberating what happened back in the 90s. What kind of Russia do we want? What kind of boundaries are we talking about? What kind of relationships do we have with our neighboring countries? But don't you think that this time, the excuses or the issue that Vladimir Putin is using when it comes to Ukraine could backfire compared to what happened in 2014?
No, I don't think so, actually. Again, I'm telling you that I'm an optimist myself. I think that we must actually remember the past, the recent past, what was actually 30 years ago. And that is just for the purpose that to do not make the same mistakes in the future. So I think it will be a great mistake for all politicians from the United States, from Ukraine, if there will be a mounting threat and mounting danger and from the West and from the NATO towards Russia, because Russia learned her lessons very well. So I think that finally, I would like to say that I'm sure that there will be no any war between NATO or Russia.
I really appreciate that. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. We wish we had more time to continue the debate about what happens next in Ukraine. Kurt Volker, Peter Zamayev, Vladimir Sotnikov, I really appreciate your insight. Looking forward to talking to you in the near future. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com, for further discussion. Go to our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Al-Bala, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.